Good morning, everybody. I'm Texas Homer. That's Paul Wadlington.
Wow.
Well, because it reverse mirrors your screen, so that's where it gets you. Try to point at me just real quick off the top of your head. Not that. You can't point directly. You got to point directionally. That's where it gets you because it's mirrored.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
That's how it gets you. This is the Tuesday show, guys.
That's how they get you, Connor.
That's how they get you. That's how Big Computer gets you, man.
This feed's going through the CIA, probably. Yeah,
exactly. Roaster, good morning. Texas boy, dude. What's up, dude? Guys, we're going to talk ESPN's FPI, Longhorns number one, undoubtedly, as the best team in the world.
There's nothing more credible than June rankings.
Absolutely. And you'll see, too, when we talk about the preseason criteria, even more credible, guys.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Linda Daddy, good morning. 7:30 a.m. in Vegas right now.
Uh-oh.
How you spelled Vegas lets me know you're probably in Vegas, dude.
That's right.
Where you're going to talk to FPI and then also more playoff fun, more dysfunctional family drama as everyone tries to pull leverage at the same exact time. And guess what? When everyone does that, you get stonewalled. So that's going to be a lot of fun. But first, ESPN FPI. So maybe I should break down the criteria here for you guys so we can see our credibility, because someone always asks what goes into this, and that's a fair argument. So in the preseason, oof.
Wrong article, Connor.
No, this one's right. For FPI. All right. In the preseason, these components are made up entirely of data from previous seasons.
Great.
Such as returning starters, past performance, recruiting rankings, and coaching tenure. They do state above, though, that if Vegas released their lines or their criteria, it would look quite similar, according to them. But I do like the idea of coaching tenure, and that's likely what's helping Texas a lot here, too, as far as coordination. Recruiting rankings, of course, being number one last year. I don't know what we were in ESPN's rankings. I don't really pay attention to ESPN's rankings, but this seems like what we're getting here. So this is what goes into FPI for anybody that are going to ask me what goes into FPI. Texas, number one, Georgia, two, Bama, three, Ohio State, four, Penn State, five. Bama.
I'm experiencing the sinking feeling of hearing the garbage truck outside, realizing I didn't pull the garbage out.
Oh, that's rough.
It is rough.
That's gonna be a long week, dude.
I hope all you guys will see me through this tough time.
Yeah, do some donations in the chat, guys.
We need a super chat.
We need a super chat for this, guys. It's Paul's going through it, guys. All right, so Bama consistently. It wasn't just this, but the other rankings we've seen come out, like SP Plus. All of this is super high on Bama. I'm good with that. Do you think Bama top five makes sense for them?
I mean.
How much do you like Kalen DeBoer?
I see the upside. I think they're being too heavily weighted by prior recruiting class rankings, probably. Because this is the third year in a row where you see Bama ranked pretty prominently. I guess 2 years ago, they did ultimately deliver, right? They went to the playoff.
Yeah.
But last year, a little disappointing for the Crimson Tide. But yeah, I think there's something... Here's the interesting thing about Bama. You don't know who their quarterback is going to be by like game six, right? You're not sure if Ty Simpson's going to hold, right? But if you listed the top, I don't know, 200 players in college football, Bama would have as many as anybody.
Yeah.
So on that, in that sense, if you believe in Kalen DeBoer and you believe in his ability to wring the very most out of a quarterback, then it would make sense to think Bama could be an up-and-comer this year.
It would have to be recruiting rankings heavy because coaching tenure is an aspect. They don't have coaching tenure.
That's right.
Returning starters, I don't know where they're at returning production.
They're okay.
Past performance last year was not that great. So it's like this has got to be heavily kind of recruiting rankings bumping them right now. But we consistently see SP Plus and a bunch of the rankings that Bam's going to be up here. So it might be a return. And like I said, I'm a Kalen DeBoer guy. I really believe in him.
We're not talking about is leaping off the page, Connor. Come on.
Who do you think? Penn State?
A&M, dude.
Oh, I'm only talking top five now, dude.
Oh, okay. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
You're an elitist.
I was like, what, Penn State? So that's where it goes. Number one, Texas. When you're talking like really not top five, but maybe top three, top four, it's like order them how you want. It's not going to make a huge difference, and the margin's got to be relatively small there. But, yeah, A&M's up, man. Second year of coaching, Marcel Reed in his second year. Needs to get better at playing quarterback, and I think he'll do that. We like their pass catchers. The NC State, Concepcion, Mario Craver out of Mississippi State was a guy that I liked and thought Sark might actually like too for his speed. It didn't look like we ended up going after him, but he was quick for Mississippi State. So I think that's important. One thing that is haunting me early into Elko is the amount of first-round talent he had on that defensive line, and it didn't feel like that. And that was really weird. I don't know if I've ever seen that, where it's like you have that level of NFL talent on the D-line, and it's kind of whatever.
Yeah, I mean, so there's a sense maybe that those guys didn't always play super hard week to week.
Shocking.
Or the whole idea of a four-man front, and you have 290-pound defensive ends. You know, it looks good on paper because the guy, you know, moves great in shorts, but they didn't really have great pass rush off the edge.
Yeah.
So,
like you said, it was all bull rush. It wasn't any kind of speed rushy stuff.
Yep.
Everyone was nervous until we looked at the tape of A&M because we were like, uh-oh, Quinn's not mobile. They've got dudes. But their pass rushing style was easy to catch if you had good tackles, right? Because they were just going to try to run at you.
Yeah. Hey, it's not too early in the morning for self-aggrandizement and patting myself on the back. But in my preview of A&M, I said exactly that. I'm not worried about their pass rush. Because yeah. Everyone's like, oh, Georgia. And I'm like, no, these guys physically couldn't be less like Georgia. Like,
yeah,
Georgia's a bunch of 6'5", 260-pound greyhounds that are just sprinting up the field.
Moving from gap to gap.
Jumping gaps and crisscrossing. I was like, A&M guys are just big and they fire out and they try to run you over. And I was like, that's not going to happen. So I was not worried about their pass rush in that game. And I mean, honestly, that was a game where I was really confident, even though we were going into College Station. But yeah. Actually, I think this year, the potential is there, really, for them to be – I know we say this every year about A&M.
Yeah.
But the potential really is there for them to be pretty good. I think they're going to be our third or fourth most challenging game, even though we get them in Austin.
And I think Klein's a good coordinator from experiencing him at Kansas State. I like his style of offense. I do think Elko is going to be a good coach. This was a thing too. Elko can't remember the outcome of the game. So this bummed me out because remember after the game, Elko was like, they physically dominated us and then said that right after the Texas game.
Yeah.
And then he made some comment a week ago, you know, we played neck and neck with a playoff team talking about Texas. And I was just like, come on, man. I thought you were going to be the sober, reality-driven A&M
color.
Yeah, and so it's like that bummed me out because that shows delusion, you know? And so it's like – and you don't want delusion at A&M. You want, like, this hyper, I know what I am. I'm not falling into the culture of, you know? And so that was another point against Elko. And it's like, don't look at the score to that game. Texas won 100%. We started doing weird stuff in the red zone like we always do, baby. But that was a bummer. Really for A&M to hear your coach say that was a close game. There was in no way, shape, or form that was a close game. So,
yeah, I mean, he's doing the rounds at like alumni things, and he's not going to be like, hey, A&M, I mean, Texas is just head and shoulders above us right now. He's creating belief and seeding, you know, it's more fun to stand up in front of a crowd and play to their delusions than to tell them the truth.
Yeah. But it's like that's where it's like that's what A&M needs a coach that's not falling into that, you know? Yeah, and, that's true. And that's good. What's going to help them is reality is going to help them. They've had all these false narratives every year. It's like the reality is what's going to dig you out of this. So I do think A&M is going to be a lot better, even though we get them at home. So I'm not surprised to see them up high. They still have
Tennessee at 10.
Yeah.
Kind of weird.
Yeah, they're more in my periphery because we don't play them. But that style of offense needs a very specific quarterback skill set. and it lights on fire when you got it. But when you don't have it, it's tricky. So I never know with Tennessee. If we played them more, I would have much stronger feel for them. What do you think of their returning assets?
Well, obviously, I mean, the contention here is that they're better without Nico, which could be true.
Could be.
Joey Aguiar is the guy they got. He was the quarterback at App State, transfers to UCLA. UCLA gets Nico Iamaleva, and then Aguiar goes, well, who needs a quarterback? Oh, Tennessee. So he goes to Tennessee. So this is the free agency round robin musical chairs of
the first unofficial trade, I guess, is what they're kind of calling
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And so, you know, it'll be interesting. I don't know. I mean, Tennessee looks, I think they'll be fine. I'm not sure they're a top 10 team. Maybe there's something I'm missing.
What do you think of Beck at the U?
We'll find out. This guy was going to be the first quarterback off the board potentially, right? Before the last season. And then he plays. I think he played really poorly. I also think he had poor receivers. I think there's off-field stuff going on with him that maybe he's not the most stable guy. But this is his chance to sort of prove it, right? Because he had a great 2023, right? But he also was surrounded by better pass catchers. So maybe this is the opportunity to show, but this year will break the tie, right? Like whatever your perception is of him.
It's the opposite of the Ewers route, right? And that's why I'm interested to see how it goes. Like, do you come back when your grade kind of drops? And does that even matter? You
know? I think the answer is yes, and potentially yes. And even if it doesn't, he's $4 or $5 million richer for having done it, which is not insignificant. Especially in Florida with their no state income tax, Connor.
Of course. Paul knows a lot about this.
But I think this is a huge, interesting test case for what you're saying, which is it better to come back? Because had he gone into the draft, he would have done so sort of apologetically. Like every single meeting with the team would have been explain your play. Like, what are you doing? What's this?
Because he was just doing lazy stuff, man. Just like you can see the defender there and throwing it right to him, you know, just doing like non-engaged quarterback stuff. And I don't know if Beck's mental eval is going to be able to do anything in the NFL. So, man, pocket that extra $4 to $5 million if you can. Because he just looked entirely disengaged last year, even on the sidelines, wasn't connecting with his teammates. The fans turned on him quick, not even just for performance, but for how he was carrying himself during poor performance. So we'll see.
Yeah, I also had the most drops in college football. So maybe that played into it.
Yeah, on top of it, like that was brutal.
Hey, Sanjack, let's make sure we get back to Sanjack 1's comment, because I think this is one I want to comment on.
The Arkansas one?
Yeah.
As we keep working down, we'll get to it.
Okay.
And then Clemson at 11 is – I'd say Clemson might be top five.
Yeah, I've got Clemson in my top five.
So this is a metric-based, right? So they're not able to use the opinions that we're using on this, but
– Well, they're also assuming they're fired defensive coordinator. So it's one thing to have – Sometimes it is good to have coaching stability, obviously. But when your coach is stuck, it's not good to have coaching stability.
Well, my favorite thing is like people will be like, dude, they're returning all their players. It's like, yeah, they were 3-9. Like, it's like you can return a bunch of bad players. It doesn't necessarily mean a good thing.
And Texas fans spent about a decade doing this. Like, look, we have 17 returning starters. And I'm kind of like, they're not very good.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you're right. Stability doesn't mean you can absolutely upgrade. As well. So I think Clemson's a top five team just with Cade.
I think all the stars are aligned for them. I'm long Clemson in many respects, including financial. So
yeah. Yeah. And so, and also playing in the ACC. So Clemson's the one that I would put in the top five here. I think they're going to have a really good season.
Well, you know, it's cool. I mean, it's not deliberate, but it's smart. Almost the way it falls for Clemson. Yes, they're in the ACC, which is great. But each end of the year is basically sandwiched by two SEC teams. So they open with LSU and then they play South Carolina.
Yeah.
So that's like a great, if they go 2-0 against them, and then
it's a great proof that they can hang.
It's like, hey, we're legit. You have to, you know, you have to respect us. And it's almost a good bet that if they beat LSU, LSU will like rally, get it together, and have a good season, right?
Yeah.
And then South Carolina, you know, had a little breakout last year. So we'll see.
And then LSU has kind of been stuck in this zone for a while. They're like mid-team. Man, when LSU gets it figured out, they're a really scary team. But we're just kind of in the middle. We got to see what Nussmeier is going to do as well. You know, he's got a little brother right now we're looking at quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Along with Philip Rivers kid.
Yeah, Gunnar Rivers too, baby.
Don't worry, if we don't like that kid, there's Phillip's got plenty of other kids.
Exactly. He's like 40 kids. Wait for the next bus. All right. Ole Miss at 13. How do you feel about their drop? Right? They kind of put all the spend in last year. That was supposed to be the big push. Do you think Ole Miss just kind of dives this year? Or Kiffin keeps them in that 10 win because he's been able to do that?
Well, so they went 9-3 in the regular season. I think they'll probably go 8-4. More likely than not. If they go 9-3, I mean, they probably beat someone they shouldn't. But I don't put them in the upper echelon of the SEC.
You've had some eyes on Auburn, though, haven't you?
Yeah. I think Auburn, I mean, they're kind of like the A&M of Alabama in a sense of like.
Yeah, but they also rise up and win national championships sometimes.
That is the thing, is Auburn is crazy in that they're just completely irrelevant for years at a time. And then they catch fire and they go win the SEC or they go win the national title, right? But if you look at their program historically, they actually have a better name and a brand than their record deserves. The big thing with Auburn is they have these highs that are as high as anybody. And then they've got sort of all-timer college guys like who are era-defining, like Bo Jackson, Cam Newton. Yeah. Like these are like two of the greatest players to ever play college football.
Yeah, legend. And
they're iconic. And so that Auburn's got that going for them. But all that disguises like 8, 9, 10-year periods multiple times in their program's history of just being irrelevant. And so it's interesting. I do think that the stars are aligned potentially this year if Jackson Arnold is even decent, like just a bus driver, because their receiver core is loaded and then they've got SEC talent basically. They've been recruiting well.
So. Well, they were fascinating last year because they were like, they would just shoot themselves in the foot at the very end of the game.
They would hang with everybody, right?
Yeah. And it's and like, I remember when OU got them on that simulated blitz and then the quarterback was like, well, I'd throw that play every time. And I'm like, that's why y'all lose.
It's yeah.
Like, you don't know what a simulated blitz is. Like this is a core function of the game. So he's like, no, he wasn't there. And then he dropped back. It's like, yes, dude, this is basic football like now. So that's why the interesting part. But they would shoot themselves in the foot. And we know Hugh Freeze doesn't have any scruples about making something happen.
Yep.
So that'll be interesting. South Carolina, I think – I don't know anyone I've talked to that didn't, like, secretly love South Carolina last year. It's like style of football. They were a lot of fun. The problem was their early season stumbles, really. But – you didn't want to face them at the end of the year, that's for sure. And so, but once again, I mean, it feels like every year they're like, could this be Beamer's year? Could this be the year? And we'll have to see, I guess. I don't, what are they?
He's got a bunch of those teams
for sure, but they're good at quarterback. So, like I said, I've never seen that performance like he had with A&M, where it's like he should have got sacked 9 times and he would just shrug it off. So Sellers coming back, he's one of the biggest quarterbacks, no pun intended, one of the biggest quarterbacks you want to watch. And if they keep playing that style, they're going to be tough. I'm glad we don't play South Carolina generally.
Yeah, they lost a ton on defense. So be interesting to see what they can replace there. And then Sellers has to sort of level up. He's a dual threat, but...
Well, he's got to play full quarterback.
He's got to be more of a full quarterback for them to sort of level up. Because they're going to have to score more this year.
Without a doubt. Before we keep going, guys. Academy Sports and Outdoors, y'all. In honor of your service and support for our country, Academy Sports and Outdoors is offering military and first responders 10% off your purchase, both in your local Academy Sports and Outdoors and online from April 27th through July 4th. Exclusions apply. Visit academy.com/discount for details. Academy Sports and Outdoors, y'all. Also, it's getting hot around these parts in Texas. I don't know about Colorado, but it's you're starting every year. I miss the heat, and then it comes back, and I'm like, why did I? It's brutal. Like, I'm like, hey, I should go walk the dogs real quick, like before a show, and it looks like I just did like 30 minutes on the treadmill. So that's it gets pretty exhausting. But go to Academy Sports and Outdoors, y'all. Get all your athletic shorts, shirts, all that stuff for summer. Okay,
young me in the corporate world used to wear a suit and tie in August in Texas.
That's got to be horrific.
That was not good. I like the heat when I'm wearing a t-shirt and some shorts from Academy, but yeah, throwing on a tie and a suit coat in 106 degrees.
Feel your shirt like sticking to you under the.
Oh, I mean, you have to wear a t-shirt under and like lean so your back doesn't touch the back of your car seat.
yeah, exactly. While you're driving. Yeah, Paul was a corporate stooge there for a while, but he broke free. What were you in? Were you medical?
I was in biotech, pharmaceuticals.
Biotech.
Yep.
Real smart guy stuff.
Debatable.
Debatable. All right. Oklahoma. Man, I wish Ian was here right now.
4-8.
Yeah, 4-8. Regardless, I don't care about the roster. 4-8.
This succession. Look, we've got six SEC teams in a row broken up by Michigan, LSU, Ole Miss, Auburn, South Carolina, OU, Florida.
Yeah,
something's got to give here, dude. These teams all play each other.
You know what cracks me up when like channels do projections like this team's going to have 8 wins, this team's going to end it, but they don't math out that it's got to be 500 all around. You know? And so they're like, it's like, dude, 7 teams can't be 10 and whatever, you know? So it's like, it's kind of that weird part where they clump together too, but it cracks me up when teams do projections and they don't think about total wins within the conference.
Oh, a couple times I wrote a column of like, hey, here's my predictions of wins and losses in the Big 12, right? And I'd send it to Ian and be like, hey, you make yours and I'll make mine. And then we'll argue about where we disagree. His would never add up.
Yeah, exactly. And but it's so common. But I'm like, dude, everyone can't have 10 wins in the SEC, dude.
No, it doesn't work that way. Even if we schedule Arkansas Pine Bluff.
There's always a winner and loser on both sides. It's gonna.
Well, that's why. So circle games like Auburn OU, right?
That's going to be a sick game for the storyline.
Exactly. Circle games like Florida Auburn. Like, these are the things that are going to determine who the dark horse is in the SEC. And, you know, it's binary. It's win-loss. There's not going to be, you know, oh, we'll split this. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, they can't all win. OU, man, that Arkansas Pine Bluff receiver they have, that's a nice-looking receiver. He got hurt.
Yeah, he
broke his leg. most like OU receiver thing ever, but he'll be back. But that's a pro style body for sure. Their defensive line looks really solid. Interior looks good. Keeping David Stone from his saga was solid. I know that I'm gonna like Venable's defense, even though y'all overhype it every year. They're elite. No, they're not. Top 15 is not elite, but they're going to be good. And then I hate to say it, man. Mateer, I think, is a baller, dude. And I think he's real good. Like, I think he's top 3 in the country good.
Wow.
Yeah, dude. And like, and I've tried to dispel this. Like, I went back and watched. And every time I watch, and not just highlights, and of course, you know, there's some mistakes there. But like, man, and that style of quarterback is give Texas fits. And so he can go play hero ball. And if OU gets into any kind of lurch, you need a quarterback with the ability to play some hero ball. And I think Mateer is going to be the real thing, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately, the comp that I have for him is Sam Ellinger. I mean, he's a better running, not quite as good throwing Sam Ellinger. But same sort of build, same sort of spunk, like Same of like, hey, I'm going to run it 30 times and throw it 40 times, and I'm just going to win this game single-handedly for us. Like, he's got broad shoulders. You can put the game on him.
And I like Arbuckle's play selection and like sequencing, not even on script. Like, I like the plays. I'm always trying to anticipate formationally, like, what's coming, right? And yep. Arbuckle does a really good job of like keeping it simple, but still putting the ball where I'm not expecting the ball to go. So I just like Arbuckle. I think, oh, you made a good decision there. Is it going to be enough? Who knows? But that'll be the interesting thing. OU, if you're just a fan of the sport and not a, you know, Texas fan who hates them like we do, OU is a really interesting team to keep an eye on this year because there's going to be stakes to their performance as well, most likely.
I think AR has a question that is well-timed for this next team.
The Big Ten?
Yep.
Do you all think the Big Ten will have a change in their Big Three? Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State.
Yes. And it may not show in the record. So Michigan actually has a pretty easy schedule. They drew a favorable Big Ten schedule. I think that they're going to take a step down. Well, I can't say they're going to take a step down since they were kind of disappointing last year. But
yeah,
maybe I don't think they're just coming back full bore. Like, I don't think they're contending for the Big Ten title.
I know Ian's writing a piece for a Michigan blog.
Oh, no.
And he was telling me, he was like watching Bryce Underwood and he thinks he's not anywhere close to being ready. And I'm like, I'm sure the Michigan blog will love that piece that you're gonna give him. Hey, y'all, your quarterback that you paid $1 billion for is not ready.
We need to commission a Penn State fan to write a Texas Arch Manning post.
Yeah, exactly. But
So here's the deal. So Bryce Underwood, I would say that. So Ian has a good eye for this stuff of identifying quarterbacks who don't really know what they're doing, mm-hmm. right? And he'll sort of prove it with clips and show you what the read is and the quarterback not responding to it. He doesn't always control enough for college game, which is Vince Young didn't always know what he was doing in 2004, and he just pulled the ball down and run for 13 yards.
Yeah.
So Bryce Underwood has that potential just like Marcel Reed does. And then there's things that they can do with the quarterback run game to help simplify everything. I mean, to me, Michigan actually has pretty decent personnel. I'm just not sure about Sharon Moore. And they don't really have threats outside. They don't have receivers.
That's my thing. I'm not really sure about Moore as a coach.
I mean, if we had Michigan's receivers, we'd be freaking out right now.
So, yeah, but that was what was cracking me up when I was doing my breakdown for the Texas Homer channel before Michigan. I was like, they don't have any receivers. And Michigan fans were like, that's what we do, baby. We're perfect.
It's like, no, it's not.
Yeah, and it's like, it's also just like, this is not a point of pride that you guys don't have receivers.
Well, they say that's what we do, and they had two receivers drafted in 2023.
Correct, when they won it. And so it's like, but they're like, that's we never have receivers.
We never have receivers. Desmond Howard didn't play here.
Yeah, and it's like, we'll see you guys in the trenches. And it's like, you fundamentally are not understanding this team this year, and your quarterback play was horrific. But that's what we do, baby. Yeah, that's what we do. So they were just – it was cracking me up, their fans, before the game. I was like, also, guys, it's not a point of pride if your defense has no receivers. That's our offense. That's going to hurt you a lot.
Also, your defense. You should.
So you think the big three, if we're just picking the top, it's going to be Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon.
Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon. And then Illinois, believe it or not, is going to upset somebody this year.
Hell of a call out.
I'm just telling you.
Yeah. All right.
Luke Altmaier. You can't bet against Brett Bielema in big games, Connor.
Yeah. All right. The Florida Gators. Man, I feel like they can range up here, man. Like Florida is one I've really got my eye on. I've said it 1,000 times, but I don't think they took our running up the score lightly there. And then if DJ Lagway can learn how to hit every level of the field, really operate, man, because he's the best deep ball thrower in the country.
Yep.
But if he can really get his reads down intermediate and short and get the ball out with that ability to hit deep, man, he's damn near unstoppable. And he has functional mobility. He's not a running quarterback at all, but he has functional mobility. So you have that too. So Hey, man, high upside. This is the make or break it for Napier. I'm a Napier believer, even when he was at Lafayette. And, you know, he came from the Bama camp and all that stuff. So I am a believer in Napier, and now Florida's really putting all their money behind it. Let's see what they can do. I liked their play last year. You just understood how hurt they were and all that kind of stuff on top of it.
I think they won their last four games.
Yeah.
So prediction I made is I think Florida is going to upset either Texas or Georgia this year.
For sure. I can see that. Can't be Texas though, Paul, because Texas is going undefeated.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. You know my bright optimism that's always leaking out of me.
That's right.
Yeah. You're a
huge optimist.
Yeah, exactly.
They call you Optimist Prime.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I never get accused of being too critical. All right. So Florida's interesting there. SC, man, on the recruiting trail, man. No roster management, but hey, pay your guys.
Paying for commitments is not always healthy.
Yeah.
It doesn't stick, but
well, dude,
what I've heard is that they get – if the player decommits, they try to get a refund. Have you heard that, Connor?
Yeah, Dellinger did that thing, which is hilarious, dude.
You know that they're texting like, hey, the guy's like, new phone, who dis?
Well, that used to be the robbery method. Like before it was legal, right, they were paying – teams would pay early commits, you know. And then you would see who had the grossest financial structure around them, because you would see that kid commit, get his payment, decommit, go to the next school, commit, yeah, decommit. And it's like, dude, I can't remember who it was, but he did like five of them in a row. And I was like, this guy is just like a highway robber.
Well, there was a time period. Do you remember when every Texas kid had Auburn in their top five, and they would go to the Auburn camp, usually all like in a big group in like a rented van.
Yeah.
And they'd go to Auburn and they were paid to attend the camp.
Yeah.
And then maybe even verbally commit would be another 10 grand or 15 grand. And then they just decommit and go, like, it was just part of the cycle.
Yeah. Auburn, and that was back to be, you had no recourse as a school. It's like, what are you going to do? Tell the NCAA you illegally paid me and I took your money?
Well, and so, I think Auburn viewed it as like a loss leader. Like they just wanted to be in the conversation, like in the recruiting cycle.
That's why they do it.
Yeah.
But it's like, there's just always little things too. Like I had a friend who played college ball and, you know, he would drive up. It's like a 3.5 hour drive and they would give you, you know, $2,000 for gas. You know, and so it's like little things like that where you're like, all right, thank you for the $2,000 worth of gas for my 3.5.
Well, pre-NIL, I mean, that's legit money. I mean, that look, when I was in college and I was washing a pair of jeans and like took it out the dryer and found a crisp $20 bill that I'd forgotten about that was in the pocket from going to a bar, you know, the weekend before, I was skipping the rest of the day. Like that was...
Well, dude, these are like 17-year-olds. Like they're getting recruited, you know?
I mean, if I find like a dollar on the ground, I'm like, hell yeah, it's my day.
But it would just crack me up. They'd be like, you know, this is for gas.
This is 2 grand for gas. That's awesome.
Yeah. So it was always funny how they would do it. But yeah, a big thing is like you would pay for your way to be basically in the top 10 of recruiting rankings. So all the networks would go, wow, I didn't expect to see Auburn in the top 10. And
that's, you know, right.
Do that whole thing. SC's not that bad because SC's a real brand. But man, it sounds like they have like, and these numbers are always end up being like inflated, but between the defensive tackle and Bowman, I mean, it's something like 15 million tied up for 3 years for both that are going to overlap. So it's like, when you're talking roster management, like just that big of a chunk on two players is just insane.
Well, that's the promise. Remember USC famously got Jordan Addison in the portal. Mm-hmm. And then Jordan Addison basically said, you guys didn't live up to your commitments. You didn't pay me what you said.
Yeah.
And SC was like, oh, sorry. You're here.
Riley has the fakest move. He always does this. Whenever they tampered, you know, and everyone tampers, I'm not mad about that, but they always have the same dumb play. Riley's like, go make sure you take another visit elsewhere. So the USC guy would always go take one high profile visit. It was Texas for Jordan Addison because of Brennan. But they would always do that, and they always end up at USC at the end. But pay attention when you hear USC early, they will take a high profile visit. Look, we didn't tamper, and then SC.
Funny.
It's wild. SMU at 20, man.
They play in the ACC.
ACC. But also, man, dude, SMU in the ACC top 20, like talking about the brand of SMU rising, man, they do a good job down there.
Hey, name a school with a higher ranking and less distributed fan support. Is it SMU by a mile, right? I'm not talking about having a couple of wealthy guys. I'm talking about like just the fans.
Yeah, everyone ranked higher as a bigger brand.
You're from DFW. Do you know any SMU fans?
No, I literally don't know a single SMU fan, which is okay. Wild. Yeah.
So that should tell you something.
Yeah, the SMU, like generally SMU is not even the number one school. So like you go do your undergrad and then SMU targets you for you're going to go get your MBA or you're going to go get your like your data science degree. I remember SMU was on me heavy for a data science thing. So they'll go after you actually too. So it's not even like as much of as like a prestige place too. But I know people it's basically they'll go get their finishing degree there. SMU sounds nice, but even the people I know went to SMU are not SMU fans. They're their undergrad fans.
I think their undergrad is like 80 grand a year now.
I have no idea.
Housing and everything included. That's pretty steep, man.
Yeah, but I don't know any SMU fans, though. That's a good point, and I've lived in DFW my entire life.
You name a school? Miami would be the only other contender.
It would be small. And Miami's
actually got a weird – when they're good, there's a weird fan base nationally that emerges for them, right?
Yeah.
Because they like the counterculture of the U, right?
Yeah. And, you're right. Miami also has this really outsized brand impact for school size and even stadium and all of that. But, yeah, SMU, man, they're – group of guys, man, they make it happen. At least they were like, even though they're in the ACC for free for however long, but it is impressive what they've been able to do to climb the ranks, especially
everyone's enjoying that. I referred to John Mateer as spunky, so now the chat is dominated with spunky. My Gen X vocabulary is playing me.
Kansas State, hey man, what do you think of Avery Johnson, man? Everyone is so like polarized on him.
If he throws better, they'll win the Big 12. If he doesn't, they won't.
I mean, they wanted him over Will Howard.
Yep.
Did you remember how patronizing they would be with Will Howard? They would keep making him split reps and be like, man, what a team player. Every year, Will Howard for Kansas State was like trying to be quarterback one, and they would constantly make him split reps. And then they would do all the media of just like, man, what a leader. Finally got tired of it and went 1-0.
What a vindication, like, plot for Will. I mean, I understand he was a bus driver. Ohio State had the best receivers in the country, etc. But his playoff performance objectively was fantastic.
And he ran in spots, too, where you needed it. And also, not just vindicating for him, Paul, vindicating for me. Because I've been
pro Will Howard guy.
I was a pro Will Howard man. Even going back 2 years prior at Kansas State, and I would have to stand in the flames, Paul, as everyone told me he sucked. And I'll say he doesn't suck, guys. So I actually liked Will Howard. And when he went to Ohio State, I thought it was going to be an issue. I didn't know that they would win at all, but I figured it would work out well. And it did.
Good job, Connor.
Dude, once again, my analysis reigns supreme. Can't help it. One day I'm going to be wrong, guys, and it's going to be a sad day, but
that doesn't happen. Until
that day, dude. And then Arkansas.
Okay, who made this?
The
whole thing. Who made it?
The FPI?
Yes.
ESPN.
Okay. Find the people at ESPN who made this product. I'm not joking. And extend to them my Venmo, email, text, whatever you want. And let's have a bet that Arkansas will not finish in the top 25 of anything. Power rankings, FPI,
SP Plus,
AP poll, whatever. This is crazy.
So also interesting too, right? Because you're supposed to get credit for returning starters.
They got
poached.
Nice. Kentucky, Ole Miss, Texas just raided them.
And then you're supposed to have a pass performance bump.
There is no pass performance.
Yeah, exactly.
And recruiting is like they're second to last in the SEC every year in recruiting.
And then coaching tenure.
I guess Sam Pittman has coaching tenure. They're trying to fire him, but I guess
exactly. Yeah. But it's like even by their metrics, I don't know how Arkansas's that up here, but they are.
So there must be a huge deviation or gap in like the scores. You know what I'm saying? So you might have a forced ranking, but the gap between Texas and Oregon might be very slight.
We can pull it up. I have it.
Whereas the gap between SC and Arkansas might be a chasm. Right? Who knows?
See, we can pull it.
Pull it up.
So Texas FPI is 28.5. Oregon's 20.5. So let's look where there's like an insane drop off.
There must be a drop off at some.
Yeah, point. SMU we're getting down to 12. So like okay. Half of what number one Texas is. So Arkansas is a 10.8.
Okay, but they're still like head and shoulders above the teams below them, right?
Yeah, the lowest it gets down.
So
to.
Like, if Arkansas played BYU right now. Who would you favor?
Well, in this, probably Arkansas, but in real life, I would favor BYU.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Is Arkansas clearly better than, I don't know, TCU? I don't know.
Clearly better than Arizona State?
Are they clearly better than Utah?
Yeah, that's where.
I sound like Brett Yormark here.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, that. So I don't know. Where are they?
All right, well, they're not finishing the top 25 of anything.
No.
I promise you. And by the way, they have a hard schedule this year.
Yeah. The most surprising one to me is Arkansas. They do have a returner in Talen Green, but that's not a program built on his strong portal high school classes. And they lost Armstrong, the do it all receiver, too.
Yes. I mean, talk about a college quarterback who doesn't. Totally understand what's going on, but he's a great athlete.
Yeah.
That's Talen Green.
Yeah.
So, but as you said, they got decimated in the portal.
And they don't
and have, they lost some guys, like some good guys to the draft.
And they don't have pass production. So it's like, I don't, that one's tricky.
And they're in the SEC. Like, look at how many SEC teams are in this top 25. Arkansas plays almost all of these teams. Yeah, pull up their schedule. It's a nightmare.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11,
Missouri.
12, 13. 13 of the top 25 are SEC teams.
Ugh. So, by the way, this proves that for the playoff, a 16-team playoff, the SEC should have 9 automatic bids.
Yes. Actually, I'm going with 16 automatic bids for the SEC.
We should be Boise State and 15 SEC teams.
and not even if Boise State doesn't win, even if they're not the best G5.
No, just Boise State.
Yeah. It's always just Boise State.
Even if they get upset by Colorado State this year.
Yeah, it's all good. So exactly. Missouri, once again, man, I remember last year, Missouri was the cool dark horse, man. Missouri was going to come get everybody. No. So Missouri, once again, low. What do you think about Arizona State at 24?
That's a Sam Levitt bet, and I don't mind it. I mean – I think that freaking Neanderthal they had carrying their ball was a huge part of their team and their success.
Yeah.
But, I mean, man, they're really well coached. I mean, there is no team that had a better game plan playing Texas than Arizona State.
And, like, they played to their strengths, man. Like, they had a light. Remember, we were like, man, that defensive line is all, like, max 280. We're gonna handle them. Nope. They were staying in there.
Moving, submarining blocks. Yeah. Like anticipating on your formation and they'd slant into your likely play call. Like it was stuff that I saw on film and I was like, hey, you know, we're going to have trouble running the ball on these guys. And everyone's like, we just dominated Clemson. And I was like, guys, Clemson doesn't know how to play outside zone. Like they're poorly coached. Their DC's getting fired and he got fired. But Arizona State, they play your game plan. Like, so a lot of coaches are like, we're just going to do what we do. We're going to go play good Sun Devil football. Kenny Dillingham is like, we're not going to do anything that we do. What we do is what you do. And we've got a month to break down your film because they got the bye, right?
Yeah.
That actually really helped Arizona State. I know people will be like, oh, come on, that doesn't matter. they really broke down Texas, man. If you watch that game, and we, yes, we were the better team. Yes, we did some stupid stuff, but a lot of that was inspired by Arizona State and what they were able to emphasize, like specifically against our running game. And then Sam Levitt's ability to improv was about as impressive. If you look at his box score, it's terrible.
I was going to say, Sam Levitt actually didn't play quarterback that game. He played exhaust the Texas defensive line.
Make Aaron Sorrell tired was his job.
He would just run around for 5 seconds and then, you know, hit somebody. But he didn't play quarterback. That was actually a really bad performance in that regard. But as far as backyard football, we got a win against the Monstars and Space Jam. Like,
yeah,
he played football, man.
So there are, I mean, often there's the, you know, figures lie and liars figure, right? But honestly, in football, a lot of the times your box score does show like how good you were. Mm-hmm. If you're a running back and you have 25 carries for 200 yards, I bet you ran pretty well, even though your O-line blocked well, right? Sam Levitt's box score for that game is terrible. Yeah. But if you actually watch the game subjectively, he was huge. He was an absolute difference maker for them.
Dude, he was exhausting. And like you said, he neutralized the Texas pass rush with his ability to move. And then also they return Tyson, right? Their number one receiver. And then Dillingham, did you see Dillingham's comments the other day?
No, what did he say? Like, we could become a blue blood? Like,
yeah, so he said in every, you know, era, like, you know, Clemson wasn't a blue blood and then came out. So he was just saying that. And the funny part is everybody immediately piled on. And then he quote tweeted the article and he's like, guys, they asked me this directly. I didn't just like come out and start saying this, you know? And he was like, so he was saying that, look, man, every generation, a new team rises. Why not Arizona State? We have a lot of fundamentals. Arizona's building as a recruiting base. He made a lot of sense, but of course everyone jumped on him just
because. Well, I hate those dog piles because there's no context, right? The media guy asked him the question directly. Do you think you can become a blue blood?
What's he supposed to say? No.
He's supposed to say, no, we've always sort of been an underachiever. I expect we'll underachieve again. In fact, I'm biding my time for the OU job. I hope Venables eats shit this year.
Right.
Like, what do you want him to say? So, right. And the truth is, obviously, I mean, I don't pretend to have any expertise in Arizona State or their alumni base. They must have a little NIL going on. Mm-hmm.
Because I know they have NIL going on.
Because we had our eyes on their receiver.
Yeah.
And he stayed at Arizona State. And I don't think he stayed there out of sentiment.
Yeah.
So, and Levitt, he should have been a prime candidate to go be the quarterback at freaking Miami, right? Or OU or somewhere.
And he stayed.
He stayed. So there must be something going on at Arizona State. I'm not
saying NIL and there's NIL and culture. And once you have both of those together, man, that you can get some real results.
Yeah, I'm not saying they got Texas Ohio State money, but they must have a little something.
They got a little something to keep their stars at least, right?
Yeah.
You know? And so it was a weird dog pile. Dillingham's a good coach, man. I've been impressed with him every step of the way. I think he's smart. I think he gets it. He's going to be at a big Power 5 here soon. What he's been able to get out of that roster is really impressive. And also, man, every time he turns around, he's like donating half of his damn salary to some good cause. So shout out Dillingham. Unless you beat us, then I'll hate you. But until then, I thought they had a great game plan versus us. And they took the early punches from us, too, and came back. The team I hate, though, they have heart. Because that's all Arizona State was saying, like, we have heart. And I'm like, oh, great, dude. I have heart versus a tank. And the tank's going to roll me over, you know? But that was actually one of the ones where I was like, okay, this team actually has tangible heart that I can see turning into punching above their weight. So, now this one's fun. 25, the return of Nebraska, dude. Hey, man, did you know if Nebraska played two plays better, they would have actually been a 10-win team? They've been saying that for like 18 years, by the way. My least favorite analysis, and this is – and I hear it everywhere, is if – XYZ plays broke their way last year, this was a 10-win team.
Right.
It's like, dude, that's what mediocre feels like. And it doesn't mean you go to the next stage. It doesn't mean mediocre turns into good. That's what it feels like to be
one of the definitions of mediocre is that you do give up the 78-yard touchdown pass in the fourth
quarter. When it matters. Yeah.
That's the point. That's why you're mediocre.
Correct.
And it so sort of defines it.
dude, it drives me nuts. Like, that's what, yeah, it drives me nuts when the analysis, if X plays broke this way, it's such a cope. And I hear from the national guys, like big names every year about XYZ team. But Nebraska needs to get it together because, you know, Rule's known for his kind of slower builds, or like not even slow builds, correct builds. But now it's seeming like we need to actually see results here in this season, right?
Well, his Rule is year three guy, right? He tears it down to the studs, rebuilds it. And year three, whether it was a Baylor, whether it was a Temple, that's the year you see it. So this is year three. He's got the young quarterback who sort of got blooded last year. Let's see. I mean,
that young quarterback cracks me up because he just copies everything from Mahomes and then he says he doesn't. And I'm like, dude, whenever he's like 28, he's going to be so embarrassed. Like to look back on pictures of him clearly cosplaying as Mahomes and then acting like he's not, which is even funnier.
Well, there's very few quarterbacks who can retreat straight backwards 11 yards and then flip it sidearm for, you know, a 20-yard gain like Mahomes.
Yeah.
In fact, that player's named Patrick Mahomes, and everyone else who does it looks like crap when they try to do it.
Well, I'm talking about, but literally, dude, like with the hair, the same glasses, like he wears the same short sleeve. When I say cosplaying, I don't even mean football style. Like, that's fine. It's off the field that cracks me up, dude, where he's like, oh, no, does Mahomes look like this? It's like, yeah, he does, man. That part always cracks me up. When, like I said, when Raiola is 28, he's going to be like, ugh, that was a cringy move. Paul, what's not a cringy move, though, dude?
Not a cringy move? You know, a baller move? A Texas ranked number one in the FPI top 25 move? Getting a mortgage with this guy. It's summer, baby. It's time to move. Kids are out of school, or you finally got a little bit of time. It's nice and hot. What better time to move around your couches and bookshelves than on a beautiful June day in Texas? Call this guy. He's going to make it happen for you. 832-557-1095. Over 20 years in the industry, a former National Merit Scholar at the University of Texas. Aha! Were you a National Merit Scholar, Connor?
Certainly not.
Neither was I, but Gabe was. He also has got a law degree, and he's just really, really good at what he does. He's a mortgage broker, which means he's going to go and shop your deal to 60 different lenders, make them bid against each other, and he's going to use his outstanding business acumen to get you the best possible deal. Don't go with big bank guy. Don't call Chase, Wells, all that nonsense. Those people, there's a reason there's a term called banker's hours, Connor, and it's not a compliment. Gabe doesn't work banker's hours. He works, I'm going to get your deal done hours. Give him a call, 832-557-1095.
Shout out, Gabe.
Shout out, Gabe. Respect, Gabe.
Shout out. All right. Top 25, Paul. Let's talk about this little bit of this playoff model. That's our boy. That's our boy, Yormark, right there. Shout
out. That guy.
Shout out, Yormark, too.
Pure class.
Fundamentally, it's just like, I don't, and you say in your article, I mean, he doesn't seem to get it. So here's the argument, guys. The SEC was talking earlier, auto qualifiers, okay? Meaning just in a 16-team format, you're going to have four SEC teams in, no matter what, four Big Ten, no matter what, two AC, no matter what, two Big 12, no matter what, and then three at large. Potentially Notre Dame, who gets their own classification every time. So that was the original thing. And the Big 12 and ACC came out against that, and they started preaching good of the game argument.
Yeah.
And so their thing was like, look, we want a meritocracy. All the buzzwords.
Whoa, that's the funny part.
All the
buzzwords. You want automatic bids to us, but it's a meritocracy.
So it's like, well, they had two. They didn't want the autos. They want the 5 plus 11.
That's what Yormark claims now.
Yeah.
He was against it prior. He's also the guy that said you should never have a G5 ranked above a Big 12 team.
Yeah. Which cancels out the meritocracy argument. But their whole thing was like, that was their whole thing, is they're pushing, we don't want auto bids, which is crazy because if you historically look, the Big 12 has had two or less every time.
Except 2018 or something like that?
Yeah. And so really, even, and I'm not actually a big auto bid guy, but still, this was a bit of a handout.
That's what I already get the time. The automatic bids. I mean, if you're a Clemson fan, that's a gift from God. That's amazing. If you're a Big 12 fan, you're getting an automatic number of bids that you would not have earned in an open meritocratic, you know, power ranking system.
And we can look historically.
But here's the thing about your market, it makes you realize most of these people have a backroom data dork who actually back tests and stress tests all these different options and then tells the talking head, hey, this is the most favorable for us, right? Your mark is just up there talking. He's never actually looked at this. So what he's now endorsing with the SEC is like, great, we're going to give you what you want, good and hard, right?
And your mark, what model is that he wanted? So the meritocracy model is the 5+11, the four traditional power conferences champions, and then the top group of five.
Yep.
And the remaining 11 would just be all
off the metrics.
Yeah. And so that's the one, oddly, that your mark's arguing for when he's talking to meritocracy.
And it penalizes the Big 12.
Yeah, and it penalizes the Big 12. Because the reality is, if it's 11 straight seeds after that, I mean, that's going to be littered, like we saw in the FPI. It's going to be littered with SEC and Big 10 teams.
Yeah, so the SEC last year would have had six teams in the playoff at the 12-team format.
And there's some years where it would be nine.
Yes, and like, your mark in a 16-team format, most years will now get one Big 12 team instead of an automatic two in a 12 format.
Yeah.
So this guy, like I'm saying, he's just up there talking. He doesn't know. He was just assuming that, well, if the SEC's for something, I'm against it.
Right.
And it's hilarious. I mean, and it's so funny. I'm laughing. And the guy that I'm partners with, one time we proposed a bonus plan for one of our employees. Actually, we went to him and said, hey, you draw up a bonus plan of who you think is fair for yourself, present it to us, and we'll talk about it. So he spends hours and days on this bonus plan, presents it to us, walks us through it, and me and my partner are both like, that seems reasonable. And then he instantly goes, whoa, wait. I'm just floating that out there. So because we agreed, he assumed that somehow being screwed.
Yeah.
So that's your mark. Like, he doesn't know, and he's just up there talking, and he doesn't have a dork in the back room data testing all of this.
Well, it's very CEO, because it's like, it's CEO politician, because he's playing the room, right? Because right. Who's going to be like, I'm against meritocracy. It's all the buzzwords that no one ever argues against, you know? So he's just like, we want to do what's fair. And so people will go, yeah, I like fair, you know? Yeah. So he's playing to the crowd. But the reality is, so it's like, it's good, man, if you're doing a work on WWE and like entertaining, but you have to look out for the Big 12's financial future. This doesn't benefit them, even though you're saying all the stuff that would get the quote unquote crowd behind you.
Yep.
It's not good for the Big 12's model. Period. So
here's the other thing, right? So the idea is, all right, well, we'll do that, but the SEC has to play nine conference games.
Well, the Big Ten leveraging that too, which is annoying.
I mean, a little. So, first of all, Texas, I think, is for the nine games.
We are, because we play OU. We lose a home game every year, alternating with OU.
Right.
So we lose a game of revenue. So we want nine so we can get another home game and max our revenue.
But the reason that a lot of SEC teams are against it is the SEC model is built on peddling hope to your fans and being glad that you're in the SEC.
Yeah.
That's the fact for half of the teams in the SEC. We're glad we're in the SEC.
Yeah.
Like, we're grateful.
Four non-conference cupcakes followed by two.
Your goal is four non-con cupcakes, and you want to go 3-5 or 2-6 in SEC play. And then guess what, Connor? You get to go to a bowl game.
Yeah.
You had a winning season. Yay! And we're SEC.
Yeah.
So if you're Arkansas, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, voting for the nine-game season is nuts. It's against your interests.
Yeah.
Now, it's for your revenue interests, but it's against your individual interests as a head coach or an AD. Keeping
your potential back-end revenue, right? Like, getting to that bowl game, selling the hope might make you more money.
Well, so actually, I think the ninth SEC game might be more valuable.
Okay.
Because
It's part of the TV deal auto.
It's the TV's going to pay out for that. I mean, all SEC games are inherently valuable. And yes, sometimes that ninth game is Texas plays, you know, Mississippi State. Sometimes that ninth game is Texas plays at Tennessee.
Right.
And you've got Neyland Stadium sold out, and it's the number one game that weekend, and 10 million viewers tune in. Like, that's so live TV, as you guys probably know, is inordinately valuable because of the advertising potential. Like, when we watch a Texas game, we watch it live, and we'll sit there through the ads, right? And we don't do that with any other TV viewing experience.
It's the only product right now that can force people into a spot at a certain time, because everyone, can force everything
to a spot, and it can make you watch your stupid car ad.
Yeah.
Right. And that's just the reality of it. And so even Big 12 football, which doesn't have many viewers, as you know, I demonstrated last year with posting all those viewing rankings, it still has inherent value because it's live sports. All live sports has inherent value. Because you can make a human being watch your commercial.
Well, and if you notice, remember the streamers that innovated all of this and changed the whole game, what are they all trying to do right now? Get into live sports. Apple TV is buying soccer, you know, and so Netflix is doing boxing events. And so it's like, so,
Connor, this is why the Pac-12 dissolved, right? So one of the worst things you can do in business is be too early on something.
Right.
Like, so for all of the innovators that were like, oh, they were the first to do this. Hey, that's cool. What you forgot are the millions of companies that predated Google, Alta Vista, right? You know, remember in Yahoo search was actually something you would use? Like, yeah.
Ask Jeeves.
Right. Ask Jeeves. The point is, you can be a little too early on something, and there's no benefit because the infrastructure and the larger understanding is not there. That's what happened to the Pac-12. Because they got sold by a bunch of Silicon Valley guys. Like, hey, the future is you're going to be showing your games on Hulu. Forget ESPN. You're going to get an exclusive deal with Apple. And they're going to pay you $50 million a school to own the West Coast. And Larry Scott and all the Pac-12 people bought that nonsense, not understanding that, well, one, they might have demographics that suggest they have the most viewers, but they don't have the most viewers. Like, the way you judge viewing is viewers, not your potential. And so these guys were too early. There's a chance that if the Pac-12 could have limped along on life support and taken that ESPN contract that they were offered lowballed, like $25 million a school.
Yeah.
If they had done that, which Larry Scott reversed at the last second and said, take it, take it, take it. And all the idiot Pac-12 ADs were like, no, we've been told we're worth $60 million. Mm-hmm. And they voted against it and destroyed their conference. If they could have held on for 3-4 more years, they might have actually gotten the Netflix deal.
Yeah.
It may have happened.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, you're right. Being too early is a problem. And they were. So, but it is fascinating that all the streamers, like I said, that changed the whole era are like going. Also, what I said would happen too is, remember, we're going to circle back. Cable always becomes cable. So what we're going to get eventually is we're going to have 90 different streamers, which we already do, right? Peacock, Disney Plus, Netflix. Yep. So some genius is going to come along in 10 years and be like, what if we packaged all the streaming services together, charge $150? And I'm like, we're going to have cable again.
We'll call it cable.
Yeah. And so it's like, that's going to eventually happen because you see this disintegration and then it's going to become too, and it's already annoying, right? You're trying to watch live sports. ESPN's trying to hit you up. Now you got to get Peacock. NFL Plus, like,
so I'm convinced, Connor. I want your opinion because you're pretty wise on this stuff. I honestly think a substantial part of the revenue model for all these nonsense streaming channels, like Tubi or whatever, Paramount, you know, all these different things, it's go acquire one property that people really want. Mm-hmm. You offer it on a 7-day free trial, and then you hope that the person forgets. I think that's their revenue model of like, you forgot you subscribed to watch Rome or, you know, to watch Deadwood or to watch Downton Abbey on Paramount. And then you forget to cancel it. And then you get the whole year, you get charged $45 and you're like, all right, well, I already paid for it, so I'll keep it for the year. And then you forget at the renewal again that you had Paramount Plus because you don't watch it for the whole year. And I just think that at least half of their revenue is predicated on tricking people into subscribing on a free trial and then hoping they forget.
I have Peacock because my wife wanted to watch Yellowstone, and I've had it for a year. She's been done with Yellowstone. So honestly, you just reminded me of doing that. And I just got HBO to watch The Rehearsal, Nathan Fielder's new show, so I need to cancel that. But you're right. And or the trick is, right, get a really big property, right? We're the ones that has Seinfeld. We're the one that have Friends, you know, and then everything else comes off of that.
Pay for 30 Rock. Hope that people subscribe. Week trial runs out. We get to hit their credit card for $58, and then another a year later, we get to do the same because they forgot they had it.
I mean, The Office was like single-handedly holding up Netflix and then Peacock, whoever got up with NBC. So, yeah, it's a thing. All right, so this is another thing. This is – let's see who wrote this. Nick Schultz, but he's referencing Dellinger and I think Pete Nakos here. So, basically, the coaches didn't like the 4-4 either. The SEC and Big Ten coaches, they're like, dude, we can get more in than this.
Yeah.
Why are we giving away, what is this, five spots that could realistically be ours because of our strength of schedule?
Yep.
So even our coaches were against that. So the coaches did like the 5+11 more, not because of meritocracy, because the meritocracy would lead to us getting more teams in. But what the Big Ten is doing is they're like, great, we can do 5+11. We'll vote for it, but you guys have to go to 9 league games.
So I get where they're coming from, but it is a little disingenuous because
the bottom of their league is nothing. So that's
the bottom and middle of the Big Ten really does.
Correct. The middle of the class or the middle class of the Big Ten is not the same thing. And the bottom of the Big Ten is a joke. So that's what annoys me. It's like, look, guys, you're our equal in revenue. We respect you. Your top line teams are the real deal. But the Big Ten bottom of the league is nowhere near the SEC bottom of the league. So trying to force a ninth game there is annoying. Now, I wouldn't even force a ninth game. I would put something into writing that you can't play an FCS team. Like, that's where I'd be like, look, you can have your extra game, but they got to be somewhat level G5 because this idea of playing Austin Peay in November is stupid.
It is crazy to see Tennessee Martin on Auburn's schedule in late November. I mean, that's dumb. Like, get out of here.
Yeah.
I will say this. If we go to 9-game conference schedules, you're now disincentivizing cross-conference play amongst the Giants, aren't you?
Well, we're working to an auto non-con Big Ten SEC challenge every year, like basketball.
Okay, well, if that's the case, are we just going to now use conference play to determine, like, are we going to overweight that? Because
you would have to.
Why would you be incentivized to play Ohio State in Columbus? If you're Texas and you got a 9-game SEC schedule,
right?
Schedule UTSA, Colorado State, and, Mercer.
Monroe.
Yeah, Louisiana Monroe, and then play your 9 SEC games. You try to go 7-2 in the SEC, and you're in the playoff.
You know what really solves all of this, but no one will want to do it, and we'll see if you would even want to do it. Everyone goes to 9 games of the 4 conferences. Everyone goes to 9, and then your non-con is 1 game from each other conference.
I would love that.
But and then the G5 is its own league now. They crown their own champion. There's no cupcakes, right? And so the argument is like, look, we like those tune-up games. We like free wins. People might get injured more. But if you want a true strength of schedule, you would have 9 conference, and then your 3 conferences would play 1 each. And by the time everyone does play 1 each, then you do have good data to do strength of schedule.
Well, and that's the other inherent problem of college football is you don't get the robust, cross-conference play that you get in basketball.
Right.
Because in basketball, you'll have multiple games matched up against other conferences. So last year, the SEC just dominated other conferences in the regular season. And people are like, well, we'll see if this holds. This is a football league
championship.
Then they got the most bids at the NCAA. They had the most people in the Sweet 16, and they won the title. So it held. My problem is if you play a 9-game SEC schedule, 9-game Big Ten schedule, you disincentivize cross-conference play. What are your power rankings built on? Like opinions? Like
it would be just random. It would just be random, the 3 teams that did happen to play a non-con with you. That's why this system's dumb. It's like, dude, do 9 everyone and then in the preseason, one from each league. That solves this. We know exactly what's up. We get rid of the cupcake games. It is becoming professional sports. The NFL always plays an NFL team. And so it's like, that's really the answer here, but everyone wants their cheap wins, right? Like,
well, it's also the college football has always been the boxing model, not correct, the MMA not, model.
Right. And MMA
boxing is about, let's preserve your record and fight 25 tomato cans mm-hmm. and then gradually ramp you up for your shot at the belt. Because if you eat a loss early, that's disastrous to your boxing. Disastrous.
Yeah.
MMA. They're like, this dude fought 10 awesome guys and he went 6-4. He's really good.
Dude, some of my favorite fighters have 8 losses. And like the, but yeah. I like the fan of it. The mindset of MMA fans are so much better because of that.
They understand when two good fighters fight, one loses and that guy doesn't suck.
And you're respected for taking fights, you know? Right.
Whereas college football, the whole thing is avoidance. And by the way, when Texas plays Ohio State, whoever wins, the loser will be like, they're a fraud. Yeah. What a joke.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
no, like, I mean, Ohio State fans, obviously Texas played Ohio State the best of any team in the playoff, right?
Yep.
After that game, they're like, it was never close. It was like, this is so stupid.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
This is so dumb.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. But that, you're 100% right, and I love that you use that analogy because I think about it all the time. We need to get rid of the boxing model. You need to play. And this concept of like kids can get hurt. I'm tired of that, man. The NFL plays 16 games. It's pros. They have more recovery, all of that. But a lot of this is just because we want 3 free wins, right? And you're at the bottom of the SEC. You don't want to play non-con. But if you want to solve real strength of schedule, you want to strengthen college football, you want to know what's up, and you get excited, right? You're going to play a Big 12 team if you're an SEC team. That's how you do it. Now, people will be, you know, the G5s don't have a chance. They already don't have a chance. Can we quit?
The gap is just.
Dude, let them win a championship. Like, being the king of the G5 is sick. You know, it's like that's also to be highly respected. So I'm tired of this. All the power conferences, man, no more of these tomato cans, like you said.
Well, so here's the deal, though. It has to be a top-down, this is what we're doing. We're not putting this to conference vote.
Well, clearly.
Because why on earth would Kentucky, Arkansas, Missouri, correct, Vanderbilt vote to go 5-7?
Right.
Because the AD is going to lose his job. The football coach is going to lose his job. Now, you might say the program may get more revenue, but individual stakeholders in those programs are not incentivized to do this. The only way it's going to happen is if the SEC commissioner goes, hey, Vandy, be glad you're in here. Be glad you're in the SEC because you have a historical link to us. That's the only reason you're in this conference. Let's speak frankly. This is what you're going to do, and you're not a true voting member equal to Texas or to Georgia. Like, shut up and take it. Now, that's the only way it's going to happen. Because if you put this to a vote, be careful about what you put to democracy, right? So, you know, if you put this to a vote, I don't think the SEC is going to vote to do a 9-game schedule and then play.
Well, I think at that point, too, you would need to alter bowls. So you would like just.
I don't give a crap about bowls. I can tell you that.
But I'm saying, like, you know, a lot of them do. It's like that's where they can put in their brochure. And so it's like, I wouldn't even say like 6 and you're in. I would be like, well, at this point, we have true strength of schedule.
Just invite whoever you want.
Well, it's also no that because that would be hilarious too. But like
you could 3-9 Texas gets invited.
If me and you were 6-6, and I played a strength of schedule in the 30s, and you played a strength of schedule in the 90s, you're not getting a bowl just because you hit 6 wins.
So I would like that example because I would play a higher strength of schedule than you.
Okay, you thought I was literally talking.
Yes.
Oh, these are called examples. It's not a direct front. But that's where I would do – because we'd have true strength of schedule at that point, and then you could start rewarding people that are taking the fights. And then that's how you disincentivize the people that are trying to duck fights and cheat the system and all of that. And then once you do that, now teams understand that we actually have to schedule and try instead of cheating and working around.
Concurrent with this, you've got to get people on the committee with some degree of sophistication.
Correct.
Because I can't do this. Well, they went 8-4. They lost 4 games. I know they played the number one schedule. And I know that they lost those four games by 12 points, but this team went 11-1. Yeah, they played the 91st ranked schedule, but
dude, they did what you're supposed to do versus a 91.
What can you do then but win games? Like, I'm so tired of these idiots. I don't want to hear it anymore. So you've got to get more sophistication. Well, I cannot hear one of these committee guys come on and talk about Bo Nix's completion percentage
as a criteria. In a screen offense.
Yes. So, you've got to ditch some of these people. And the meritocracy has to be at the selection level, too. Like, I can't have a random journalism professor who's on the committee because she's a woman.
And I don't want any journalists at all, because like I'm horrified by how much journalists actually know football, and it's 90% of the time they don't know any football.
The only exception, maybe, I guess, because technically he's a journalist now, is Joel Klatt. I'll put him on the committee.
I'll let Klatt. You know what I'm saying? But the beat writer generally, like,
yeah, it's crazy how little they know.
How little they know about actual football.
If you ever listen to the Cover 3 podcast.
Yeah,
they do a good job. But Bud Elliott has a thing called Summer School.
Yeah.
Where he interviews these subject matter experts on their teams and asks them, like, how are you guys going to look this year? Just from my research on Thinking Texas Football and just what I know about college football, several of those guys have been wrong about stuff about their team. And they're the beat guy for that,
right,
for that site on 24/7. And I'm not knocking on 24/7. I'm sure that's universal.
That's just who Bud has to work with.
That's the guy assigned to him. And like the guy says things that are unequivocally wrong. Like not just my opinion, but like not true.
Well, dude, like when they let like the media vote on preseason players, I'm like, what is qualified about this? They're not qualified to do this, man. And I was like, well, they watched all the game. It's like, first off, they don't have the time to watch every game. So this concept is crazy. Like each game is 3.5 hours. You watched everyone from around college football. But that drives me nuts too. Like, don't just let the broader – there should be a legit – and we could get someone like Cameron Saran or some these really smart football guys to be like, dude, design us a 25-question football test. Don't go too crazy, but here's a diagram of counter. What is this? You know,
just, cover two.
Exactly. Like just, and I'm don't go crazy. No trick questions. Like just real things. Here's a diagram. You know, what does this mean? And you should have to pass that 25-question test, give you a 70 or above. Now you can vote on football matters. But this concept that just because you have a field pass and you watch a lot of football that you know the game is just not true.
You're an aristocrat and not a man of the people.
Correct. I am an elitist 100% in that regard. I'm not going to outsource voting here in this situation. But the Big Ten wants them to move up to 9.
Yeah. So they're in the chat,
back on that,
not to crap on other sites or anything, but in the chat, someone mentions one of the examples that I came up with from that summer school, a subject matter expert said things that were factually wrong about his own team. And this happens multiple times. So we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. But, and then coaches are also really against play-ins, which I am too.
Yep.
We're not doing playoffs to playoffs. Also, what is the regular season? It is a playoff. It's a playoff to get into the playoffs. So then at that point, we would have a regular season, which is a tournament. Then we would have a play-in tournament to get in another tournament. So we'd have three layers of tournaments.
We also need relegation.
Yeah, that'll never get voted on.
I abhor, obviously any non-American sport is inherently wrong.
Dude, I think soccer leagues really have smart.
But relegation is the best.
Yeah, dude. Like when I was really paying attention to their systems, I'm like, I think they have this right. But
they have it right. Because the panic and fear of like Aggie fans potentially getting relegated and they've got a last game. It's all riding on that. Can you imagine?
Well, we want to talk of, you know, the meritocracy buzzword, right? But the reality is A&M, Texas during the dark decade, these brands make too much money to ever go down.
That's
to
true. Relegate, you know? Don't want to subjugate them.
That's the problem is our money comes first, then trying to get performance. It's not the other way around.
I came to this understanding a few years ago, but if you understand college football as an ad delivery mechanism, then a lot of these things will make sense to you that didn't make sense before.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate, but that's the truth.
Yeah. So anyways, we had all this scuttlebutt, to use a Fanatic perspective term, shout out, all week about hoping that we were going to get a model, and it looks like where they're going to pass the buck once again. Everyone's going to filibuster and throw out their talking points. It's also really funny to listen to like an SEC channel, and then I'll go listen to like 365 Sports, right? And those are like Baylor coverage, Big 12 slant, that kind of stuff. And just to hear the two worlds that aren't even talking to each other, they're just talking to their bases. It's hilarious, man, to hear the differences in how they view it. Because the Big 12 teams all go to the big bad SEC, you're destroying college football.
Right.
And then the SEC goes to like, you should be grateful. And so it's like, it's so funny to hear these two worlds. I mean, totally different. You wouldn't even know you were talking about the same sport if you just heard one side of the
argument. Well, that's why seemingly innocuous non-con games like Baylor, Auburn
matter.
They're going to be a much bigger deal than you would think when that game actually rolls around. You're going to, as a Texas fan, and believe it, we're not into all the SEC stuff. You're going to have feelings for Auburn when they play Baylor. Like, we've got to win this. Come on.
Like, we have talked too much
noise. We have talked too much trash for you to waste this opportunity.
Yeah. And that's how, and you saw the SEC, anytime they'd play us and stuff like that, you would see this like conference grouping together of like, we got to win these. But hey, man, ultimately, in true college football fashion, the important people got together and talked, and nothing came of it.
That's right. That's how you should work.
That's college football, baby. That's the tradition of this great sport. Fans, thank you guys for hanging out. Chat, thank you guys for chatting along with us. Paul, always excellent insight. Always enjoy it, man. And this was IT Live, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Later, y'all.